So it's been a pretty heavy couple weeks for Ask an Atheist, and clearly some pretty heavy stuff going on in the world. Sort of, this is some really kind of a down week, I think. But it's Sunday, it's Ask an Atheist, and we're going to talk about some fun stuff today. You know, we're going to talk about UFOs, abductions, Gulf Breeze, Florida, you know, all that fun stuff. Listen, you're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me is Case. How you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm doing great, thank you.
And Mike, how you doing?
Doing just great.
Cool. And so with us in the studio today is one of the show creators and nationally touring comedian, Jeremy Whitman. How you doing today?
Oh, not too bad.
So Jeremy has a very interesting history with Ask an Atheist. He helped us create the show.
The inception.
Yeah. At the inception, and you were with us for the video that shall not be named, and
I've been there every time the show's evolved.
Yeah,
I've been involved somehow.
You've been with us every step of the way, but you are a comedian, and you went to one of the towns known for comedy. You went to Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Also a town known to people in the atheism visibility movement as, the home of the atheist experience.
Sort of the Alamo down there, yeah.
Yes.
Also in terms of intellectualism in Texas.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you were there for a few weeks, and then Ask an Atheist ran into its trouble with the station we started out on, Scan, up in Seattle.
We literally changed into a new species.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we evolved.
Because we were a television show at that point, and they shut down the television show to silence the 9/11 conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And we got swept up in that dragnet.
Yes. Yeah, we did.
I think we came out the best out of all the shows on that network, though.
I think so. I did catch a little bit of, Seattle Community Media or whatever the new station is, and now they're just sort of all in their kitchens doing the same stuff that they're doing. And honestly, not a huge change in quality. But
yeah, the same sound quality that they had before.
Yeah, the same lack of transition between shows. It's, all the stuff that you've come to enjoy from crazy conspiracy theorists. But you turned around and came right back up to help us out, and you put on two comedy shows for us now, one here in Tacoma and one up in Seattle.
Yeah, yep, fundraiser shows, both of them. We had Brad Upton on the first one from Almost Live, and Kathy Sorbo on the second one.
Yeah.
Derek Sheen and Kermit Apio. So
yeah.
All good, top-notch comedians on all of those shows.
And, getting the comedians in front of an audience that maybe hadn't, gone to see comedy before. It was really an interesting meeting.
Comedians all came up to us after all these shows, because we do a lot of shows in, let's say, less affluent settings.
Right.
Under beer lights and NASCAR banners sometimes. And they were very happy with our audiences. Very happy to have very intelligent audiences where you didn't have to hold them by the hand for some of the material.
Sure. Yeah, I just remember, wait, I can do this material?
Yeah.
They would do stuff they just generally wouldn't do for 20 and 30 minutes at a time.
It's always been very enjoyable for the comics that have worked for the show.
So you're with us today to talk about a new project that you've started.
Yeah, I'm going
to
abandon the show completely again for a third time now. And this will get us to XM Satellite Radio, perhaps, or 3D.
Well, Ask an Atheist in 3D. Watch us sit and talk for...
Yeah. Now I've started up a new project going back to my roots as a road comic. It's called the Mobile Asylum Tour.
Okay.
And it's going to kick off here August 2nd in Tacoma with Eric Pudding Lorenz and Becca Berry and myself on a show at the Stonegate in downtown South Tacoma Way.
Yeah, I've seen these comedians and they're fantastic, and I've been to the Stonegate. It's a really great venue.
You've been to a Mobile Asylum show already, because we did the soft launch there at Bender's
at
Monday. And that's what you were at. You saw Becca and Eric, and they blew the doors off the place.
Totally, totally. Yeah. I'd never really encountered the kind of stuff that you're going to see at Mobile Asylum in real life before. I just never seen somebody come up there and just basically destroy the audience. It was fantastic.
Well, this is road comedy we're working on, so it is grab them by the short and curlies and hold on to them, because if you lose their attention, it's not going to work.
So you're launching here in Tacoma, but then you're going to taking the show on the road.
We're going to do a bunch of local stuff in August, maybe a little bit more in September. Then September, we are hitting probably I-90 and just going east, doing all the old stops.
All right. So if you'd like to see somebody from Ask an Atheist and a couple of really great comedians with that, and they want to know where the show is going to get closest to them, where would they find you?
MobileAsylumTour.com.
All right. MobileAsylumTour.com. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you guys.
Hey, yeah.
See you
talk
around.
To you soon.
All right.
Okay. So we've been getting a lot of feedback lately. As you know, we've been doing some fundraising for, not for us for once, but for a political cause here in Washington State. And last week, you know, before the right before the show, which was pre-recorded, we actually raised $1,700 plus for Referendum 74, which is in support of equal marriage in Washington.
Yeah, the governor, Governor Gregoire, signed a bill back in February legalizing same-sex marriage, and the churches got and hit the ground right running right away. We got hundreds of thousands of signatures, and now we have to deal with that law being challenged.
Right.
The bonus is it looks like we are leaning in the direction of justice in this one, but that's not going to happen without a fight, that we should never make an assumption just because we go in with the advantage of the public opinion that we're going to win. So we raised some money. We did a 24-hour streamathon on Ustream and raised something in the range of $1,700, was it, Sam?
Yeah, $1,700.
For a combination of Approve Referendum 74's campaign, which is Washington United for Marriage, and the Education Fund for Equal Rights Washington.
Yeah. Now, we've gotten some odd feedback about this that I want to spend some time talking about. I was actually... just for a change of pace, for a while, I was planning on talking about some other stuff. Today, I really wanted to talk about UFO abductions and stuff like that. But we've been getting some very strange feedback from the atheist community on YouTube, in person, in the atheism community here in Washington, about how marriage equality is a divisive issue for atheists. It's very disturbing.
It isn't really.
No, it's
not. Usually the people who say this, there's a handful of people. We've gotten comments in everything from, I guess you could say, online lists that we're on, as well as emails, and there was a comment on YouTube. YouTube was probably the one that was the most strident, saying, "Oh, why did you change your format to all gay all the time?" And we have one here saying, "Why are you spending so much time talking about gay and lesbian issues on the show, as if this is somehow the majority of the stuff that we talk about?"
Yeah, it's very strange, because let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say, and I want to get both of your responses on this, let's say that Focus on the Family and the Eagle Forum and a lot of, you know, and some very considered liberal churches here in Washington State or in some other state suggested that the Ten Commandments needed to be in every classroom, that just because of the way things are, their argument could go, the Ten Commandments are the rules that everybody lives by. They're in every religion. Everybody follows these things. But we are a Christian nation. Therefore, Ten Commandments should be in every classroom. Everybody should be forced to see the Ten Commandments in their classroom every day. How would you respond to that?
I think pretty much the exact same way we responded to the attack on gay rights.
That's sort of my point, and thank you for torpedoing me.
All right.
How about you?
Yeah, there's no foundation for the argument that we're a Christian nation whatsoever. A lot of that is rewriting of history, and we all know this.
Yeah,
is to fit that narrative of we are a Christian nation, therefore we have to have the Ten Commandments in church in schools rather.
And that's the narrative that they would use. It's the narrative they use for the Ten Commandment installations in the southeastern United States, where they want to have this big marble statue that has the Ten Commandments etched on it in some public place. This is clearly something that is religiously biased. It's clearly Christian privilege, and it's clearly something that the atheism community would be against. Now, and that's exactly what Referendum 74 is. It's the same groups of people. It's Focus on the Family. It's the Eagle Forum. It's otherwise liberal Christian churches in Washington State. It's the same group of people from the same place for the same reasons. They're just saying that, you know, because marriage is between one man and one woman, and that's the way God set it up, therefore, because we're in a Christian nation, this is the way marriage should be in the United States, and this is the way marriage is going to be in Washington. That's their argument. But because it has to do with the LGBT movement and not specifically the atheism movement, it somehow becomes a divisive issue. I don't understand this. We're atheists. We're skeptics. We're rationalists. We want to see a secular government. I don't care who it supports. I don't care what it's about. I don't care what religion is claiming privilege here. If it's in the secular laws, if it's encoded into law that everyone must follow, and it has religious privilege in it, we want it seen gone. I don't understand how this is divisive for the atheism movement unless there's some other ulterior motive or ulterior emotion that they refuse to tell us about.
Well, I think that's exactly it. This is people trying to push their private religious views onto all these other people, all of us, through the law.
Yeah.
And I don't see why anyone in the atheist movement could possibly have a problem with us fighting this, yet we still have people that are.
Right.
First, the argument that a lot of these people making that we're now all gay all the time.
Yeah.
One, it's false. It's clearly not true. One, we've done maybe one episode on gay rights.
I think
one fundraiser on gay rights.
Yeah.
And I guess if you were to take all of the time we've talked about gay rights and attacks on gay rights by religious people, by exclusively religious people, and you put it in a big ball, it would still equal less than two full episodes of our show.
Yeah, it's less than 2 hours out of 110.
Let's not also forget that we actually owe a debt to the gay community in that they help pave the way and give us a lot of the ideas that we use now in order to get our ideas put forward.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And like I said, I was just in the last few weeks, we did the Superman is Greater Than Jesus episode. We did the Scientology episode. The comic book episode is very important to you. The Scientology episode is very important to me. None of that has to do with marriage equality. But we do live in Washington State. I mean, we understand that our audience for Ask an Atheist is worldwide. However, we are where we are. We do live in Tacoma. We do have a friends and family and a following here in Tacoma. And we're going to talk about things that are happening in our neighborhood. And that's part of what the show is. And right now, one of the biggest things on the ballot, and if anybody at Ask an Atheist is driving this, I'll take the blame. But Referendum 74 is big. It is a huge initiative, and it is the religious privilege initiative on the ballot. So of course we're going to talk about it.
In fact, the religious argument is the only argument that can be made for banning same-sex marriage. And we've talked about this how many times on the show. So if in the event that we have made it all gay all the time, which we haven't,
yeah,
to the small degree that we have talked about gay rights on this show, if somebody feels that that's way too much, it only leads me to the conclusion that they're sensitive about it simply because they're probably homophobic. And those are people I'm not afraid to alienate.
Okay.
That if that's your main reason, I'm not going to listen to you because you talk in favor of gay rights, you're not an audience member that I care about losing.
To the people who feel that this is divisive, I wouldn't just call them a homophobe and walk away. I would just ask them that they challenge their own beliefs and their own stance on this issue, just as they choose to challenge ours. That they put themselves under the same scrutiny that they're putting us under to see where that motivation is coming from. If you have a real argument that we shouldn't be talking about this, I would like to hear it. I need that challenge in order to sharpen my own beliefs, to make sure that I'm going in the right direction. However, we've talked about this for a long time. We've done a lot of, we've done a lot of stuff on this, and we've never seen anybody talk about being against marriage equality that didn't come from a religious perspective. It's just religious privilege. That's what we're against here at Ask an Atheist when it comes to politics. So we're going to talk about it. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and now we're going to talk about sexual practices in the LGBT movement. No, kidding.
Gay UFOs, right?
Yeah. No, we're actually going to do an email. So, Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, there's, a really quick one. Jimmy from Australia wants to ask us, do you seriously believe in the flying spaghetti monster? Please give some proof.
Wait, really?
Yes, that is an actual email, and I'm going to make the assumption that they meant this in all earnestness.
Okay, I'm giggling, I'm laughing, I'm going to take it. I'll say, okay, let's answer this seriously. Case. Talk to us about it. You were past president of Seattle Atheists,
yeah,
known for their enormous flying spaghetti monster.
Yes.
So, what is your stance on the flying spaghetti monster?
Well, all right. So, I should we work from the assumption that he doesn't know the history of this and start from there?
I think we can do it in brief.
Okay. Well,
let's explain it, because in explaining it, you answered the question.
Okay. So, the whole idea of the flying spaghetti monster was in response to the Kansas School Board,
yeah,
which was basically trying to put forward the idea that we were created by God. And so, basically, I forgot the guy's name who made it. His idea was there's just as much proof for a flying spaghetti monster creating us as say, God did, or, the God of the Bible. So, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to make up this separate thing, this separate religion called Pastafarianism, and it's going to be just as provable as say things of the creation story in the Bible. Mm. So it's basically a parody of that whole story, of that whole event.
Is there anything in law that says that that the believers of a religion must be fervent believers of that religion, or just that they go to the church?
Absolutely. There's nothing. Just simply saying that it's your religion is enough to prove it.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to believe it. I mean, Pat Robertson might not actually believe it, but it doesn't really matter because he gets the same legal protections.
Yeah. Now we've been explaining it, but I don't think anybody has actually said no.
No.
We don't actually believe in the flying spaghetti monster.
No.
It's a thought experiment.
Yes.
It's a joke.
It's a joke.
They come up with a fake religion that is clearly false to make fun of one that is, but has just as much proof behind it. That's the joke.
Yeah.
The Atheist Invisibility Movement is filled with snarkiness. I mean, it's one of the primary drivers. A lot of people think that atheists are angry and atheists blah, blah, blah. I would challenge that and say instead atheists are snarky.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially when we have a movement, the large part of it is on the internet. Jokes and memes are going to become a big part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's snarkiness and cat pictures, basically.
So the bottom line is it's just shorthand for there's just as much proof for this as for what Christians believe. And that's really it's a shorthand for that.
And it makes for great parade floats, great iconography. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting art that's being fueled into what is essentially a joke. There's, you know, I think the only difference between this and the Church of the Subgenius is I think there might actually be fervent Bob followers out there. I actually think there might be people who believe in that. But this is clearly a joke. It's all about being a joke.
It's as close as atheism gets to a mascot is how I look at it.
That's a really great way of putting it, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, we got one more. Let's do one more quick email.
All right. This is Bradford from Utah. I guess this is directed at me, so I guess you should probably read this one, Sam.
All right. So, a recent Ask an Atheist, you questions God, use, or abuse of power in the Bible and compared it to the various superheroes. It made me wonder, if the crew of Ask an Atheist had their three wishes, what would they wish for? Something selfless and moral, I wish for an utterly limitless source of cheap, clean energy like cold fusion only better. Something moral but bent to selfish ends, I wish for an utterly limitless source of cheap, clean energy discovered by me, making me rich and famous beyond imagination. Or something completely selfish, I wish for a hyperspace-time ship to take me any when and anywhere, complete with holodeck and light to live out godless fantasies free of consequences and rejuvenation tank to cheat death. Or maybe something inconsequential like to be good at math or to have grandma's hip pain go away. Where are you taking this?
Well, this is obviously aimed at something we did last week. We did this game called Dr. Doom versus Yahweh, basically pointing out that the actions of the God of the Bible very much are like a comic book supervillain.
Yeah.
That these are awful things. And essentially what I see Bradford doing is he's basically yelling at us, well, you guys aren't perfect, so who are you to judge?
Okay.
So, no, I'm not perfect. That the whole point of this one was it was a joke, but it was also a joke to make a serious point.
All right.
No, I'm not perfect, but I don't play myself off as if I am perfect. I don't make the claim that I'm perfect.
I don't know that this is necessarily who are you to judge. This seems a little bit more you make the call to me.
Yeah, but, I mean, let's just look at the God of the Bible. He is, in fact, evil. And if I suddenly had ultimate power, would I use it selfishly sometimes? Probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to claim that I'm going to be perfect. I'm going to have flaws, but I certainly wouldn't use ultimate power, even for a brief time, to demand worship through threats. I wouldn't tell somebody to kill their kid to prove how much loyalty they have to me. I wouldn't kill somebody with bears because they laughed at me.
Yeah. No,
not anymore. Yeah.
This is a question that demands an answer. If you had a wish, how would you fall on this, on his challenge here? What would you wish for?
I'd probably go with the first one. I'd be completely selfless. I'd go with the unlimited power.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the fact that I'm flawed and say I would probably ask for a cure to cancer, an end to starvation, but I'd probably give myself stuff too. Again, I'm not putting myself up. I'm not going to demand devotion. I'm certainly not going to try to claim perfection. But again, the whole point of this thing, Bradford, was that the God is a monster, and I don't have to be perfect to point out a monster. Kim Jong-il was a terrible, terrible man, and I don't have to be a paragon of virtue to point it out.
I would challenge that faster than light travel is selfish. I think I'm enough of a fan of Stephen Baxter to know that if we had faster than light travel, we might have limitless energy to go with it. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to the break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about aliens and alien abductions.
No human is burdened with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no-cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And like I said, we're going to go with something fun today. You guys want to talk to us about aliens.
Aliens. Not in the same sense that, say, Tom Tancredo does. But
right.
More of in the sense of actual little green or gray men.
Mm-hmm.
I should probably start this off with a little bit of a confession.
Uh-oh.
I think that all of us as skeptics, as rationalists, as atheists, as non-believers, we all probably started somewhere, for the most part, where we all believed in something that James Randi called woo-woo. You
know, right, yeah.
Irrational beliefs. And for me, it was aliens.
No kidding.
Okay, let's just say it. In the early 90s, there was a glut of alien abduction movies. This is when I was 10 or 12, by the way, so you don't judge me too harshly. There were a glut of movies on Fire in the Sky, Communion, Fox documentaries, where we'd have an alien autopsy hosted by Jonathan Frakes from Star Trek The Next Generation.
I remember that.
I mean, these things were everywhere. X-Files at the height of its popularity, and there was just TV movie after TV movie based on some book that suddenly could get a movie rights sold about alien abductions, about little guys with almond-shaped eyes and gray skin coming in your window and snatching your people up.
Mm.
And I lived in fear for a couple years that I was going to get snatched up and probed.
That's fascinating. I had no idea.
And I should probably tell the story about how that belief fell apart.
Oh, when you were actually attacked by aliens?
I thought I was.
Okay.
I was about 10 or 12, and I wake up in the middle of the night, probably 2 or 3 in the morning, with that terrified feeling, that terrified irrational feeling of a presence in the room. And I make myself open my eyes just a little bit, and at the corner of my eye, I see this large object. I think it's an alien head, and it takes me like 10 minutes, but it feels like an hour. Just work up the courage. I'm going to fight this. I'm going to fight this thing. I'm going to fight. And I finally work up the courage. I launch myself out and kick it as hard as I can. And it's a helium balloon floating at the edge of my bed. And
really?
Aliens weren't so scary.
Where did the balloon come from?
I think it was a birthday party.
Okay. I mean, was the balloon placed there by aliens, you think?
Probably not. I recognize the balloon. It was already there. Right. But it's not something you're used to having in your room.
So I mentioned in the last bit that you are a past president of Seattle Atheists, but you're the current grand poobah of Seattle Skeptics, are you not?
I prefer the word archon, but
archon.
Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yes.
Wow, evil.
No.
So this is, there's a lot that skepticism has to say about this. There's a lot of research that goes into this, sort of the commonalities of UFO phenomenon, isn't there?
Well, first of all, I just want to tell Mike that I do empathize with you. I grew up on a steady diet of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. I mean, how much of a trusted person could Leonard Nimoy be to me? Spock is saying that, you know, that UFOs visit us. They created the tombs and they did all the. I understand. So I had close encounters of the third kind. So
yeah.
I totally hear. I don't share your fear of them. For me, it was more Jaws and Amityville Horror, but I do understand.
Well, what we're pointing out here is that there's some really great media attached to the alien concept. That it's a really fun concept, and it seems to speak to people. There's something there psychologically. Who knows that people really like this idea of aliens doing things to us. It's very strange.
The narrative seems to change too. That about the time frame I was talking about, the early 90s, it was all about abductions, and nowadays it seems to be they built the pyramids. It seems to be the new ancient alien narrative that they're building now. But it goes through waves of popularity, and it seems we're on a high point again.
You know, I see it differently. I think that we're at kind of at a low point compared to say the 80s and 90s. But just like James Randi has said, is that good woo always comes back. It always even when you've popped that balloon, it'll come back another decade or two later, that another generation will revisit it and make it their own, and we'll see it again. So you may be right. It may be on an uptick.
I mean, I don't think we have to talk about where the fascination of life on other planets comes from, but why does it specifically take these very deliberate forms of abduction and building the pyramids? Why do these specific alien stories keep coming back?
You know, I don't have an answer for that. Before we get too far, I need to give a shout out to someone who is who's a listener and a fan of the show. Before we get too far, because there's some things that I want to mention about this that actually we'll come back to. Listener of the show, his name is Dr. Caleb Burns, and I'm digitizing the old archives of Seattle Skeptics, and I come across this Portland Town Hall, 1992, and it's this huge crossfire type thing where half the room is believers, half the room are skeptics, and they're debating the existence of Bigfoot, and so. You had the believers, and they've got all these eyewitnesses. You've got an anthropologist who's at UW, and they get their evidence. And here's Michael Dennett, the former president of Society for Sensible Explanations, my predecessor, and Caleb Hall, and they're giving a reasoned defense of why you shouldn't believe in Bigfoot. These guys are working without a net. They've got nobody. They don't have the skeptical community we enjoy today. They didn't have all the science on their side. I mean, now it's a given. Now it's almost a done deal. We all understand that Bigfoot doesn't exist. But then it was a very real and very hot commodity.
You were playing a little bit of this before, and
yes.
There was some guy. The only part that I remember was some because I hadn't seen the video at all yet. Was some guy saying that Bigfoot will never be caught because he has vibrations that exist in different time waves.
Yeah. And this is a point we're going to make, is that when you work with a hypothesis that has no good evidence, when you work with that, when a group accepts that, what you're saying is that pretty much every hypothesis is just as valid, regardless of how much evidence it has. So this guy comes in and he goes, I'm going to say something that nobody's actually heard before, that the reason why we haven't caught Bigfoot is because he travels between these interdimensions, between different Earths. And that's why you can't catch him. And at this point, the people, the believers, they facepalm. I actually got a great clip of the one of the believers just facepalming. Like, no, that's not it. This guy's the kook. We're the real deal. And I just found that fascinating. And we see this also with the UFO groups, because I came across this newsletter called Samizdat, which is this pro-Hitler. The Hitler had some secret UFO base in the Antarctic, and that there are poles that we can go to the middle Earth. And I'm sure that mainstream UFO groups just immediately dismissed
this. You know what? I saw that, and Leibach does the soundtrack, And I think Udo Kier is the Führer in that movie.
What are we talking about? I'm talking about a newsletter. What did you see?
I'm talking about the movie Iron Sky.
Yes. Either way, we're talking about Nazi flying saucers.
Yeah, we're talking about... But Nazi flying saucers are also a common literature trope. That's been going on for a long time, and it ties into sort of the Gernsback stuff, the Hollow Earth stuff. There's a lot of fiction in this supposed fact.
There's a lot of weird dichotomy, but the way he talks about this Bigfoot thing plays out the same way, which is... I've seen this with 9/11 Truth. I've seen this with everything, where you have these guys who are the respectable people in the group who believe something crazy, and then you have the guys who think that, oh, well, an alien death ray did this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, we lost the caller. Darn. We had somebody who wanted to talk about the Blue Book of the UK, and then that sounded pretty interesting, but... feel free to call back.
Is that a Doctor Who reference?
Well, there was, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was Project Blue Book in the 1970s or earlier. This was the Air Force took a concerted effort to research all the different sightings that witnesses had asked, reported rather. And so this was the Air Force making this effort to shake these things down and see if there was anything to it.
Okay.
So, so they had a TV series based upon this. So this could be what he's talking about is the Blue Book. The Project Blue Book thing. I'm not sure. But
So I have to ask, Case.
Yes.
When somebody talks about alien abduction, what are the typical elements of an abduction story?
Okay. Well, there's this the Center for UFO Research has kind of this way of measuring what is an alien abduction, and pretty much it starts out with to be abducted, you have to meet some certain criteria. One of them is you have to have been moved from a place that you were in to another place, has to have been from someone that is not of Earth. You had to have been transported against your will. Usually it involves spending the night or something like that. And the more advanced cases, then there's some sort of research done on you, typically through anal probes, I imagine, is the way the whole
some
thing
sort
works
of
out.
Medical examinations,
yes,
are,
yes,
a big part of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, forced medical examinations. I can see the horror behind something like that.
Sure.
I guess you can only speculate about this, though, Case, but when people experience these things, I don't think there's anyone in the room that thinks that somebody's actually being abducted by people from another planet. But what do you think, speculating, of course, is actually happening?
Well, there's a few things. And we see kind of these same patterns with belief of other things. And that the first one is that people who come across things that they can't explain, they fill in the gaps. They fill in the gaps with usually something cultural. So in one case, it could be I was abducted by aliens. Another one was, here's probably my favorite example, is that if a group of people were to hear a noise in a cornfield at 2 a.m., some group of people, if they were ghost hunters, would say that's probably a ghost. Another group would say it could be demons. Another one would say it's UFOs. Whatever their pet theory is, they'll lean towards that or some show that they heard recently.
It sounds a bit like you just see or hear what you expect to see.
Yeah, yeah. And the human mind fills in the rest.
It's funny because it reminds me a bit of the sort of way that the appearance of these aliens in our popular culture has changed over the years, that there seems to be the sort of this cultural consensus towards the gray alien with the almond-shaped eyes, that if you look at the very first instances of alleged alien abductees, close encounters, the variety of aliens that people saw were just, it was broad. I mean, you saw everything, tall aliens, short aliens, skinny aliens, fat aliens, green, gray, blue, purple, whatever. But it seems like once we got that ironed out image from the cover of Communion by Whitley Strieber.
Yes.
That's what everyone saw.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we do have a call. Andrew from Lincoln, Nebraska is back, and he wants to talk about a news story that we were going to cover later in the show, but I don't see no reason not to rearrange it. 6,700 pages of documents were compiled and published online by the Ministry of Defense detailing UFO and alien encounters across the UK. Highlights include silver-suited faceless humanoids in West Wales, men in black in Lincolnshire, and shape-shifting objects on a football field in Chelsea. So how you doing today? Andrew,
hey, what's going on, my favorite atheist?
Awesome.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to say that, first of all, I started listening to you guys starting last week when you had the king of the UFO religion.
That's awesome, yeah.
It really is tying in. You guys got a theme going on here.
Yeah, actually.
And I'm also going to say I was raised in a really fundamentalist Christian household. But the one mistake they let me have was they let me go to the library.
Frank Zappa would approve.
It was in the kids section, but they still have books, and I could read. And I read all about dinosaurs. And actually, UFOs was one of my big subjects, too, I really liked. And kind of like Bigfoot. And, well, I don't know about the interdimensional Bigfoot. That's kind of new to me. I don't know if he has, like, a special TARDIS, if he uses... I'm not even going to question it. I'll wait till a scientific paper comes out about that.
Exactly.
But anyway, last week I was reading about some kind of declassified UK document.
Yeah.
That Bush's best buddy was in charge of. Well, I mean, he oversaw it. But the thing that struck me was that the unedited top secret documents acknowledged that there were unidentified flying objects, but that they were probably some kind of yet unidentified plasma phenomenon, and that it could that they were worried that it could be weaponized. So
okay, so that was
the thing that struck me is like it always boils down to scientific explanation. Like that was the thing as a child; it always bothered me that no one could get a picture of Bigfoot, no one could ever get a nice picture of UFO or a nice filmography of someone being abducted. It was always hearsay or...
Yeah, I think that's pretty much standard for it. When you actually see this sort of documented video footage of a UFO, often it looks kind of like it was filmed by Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when they do these sort of movies that are found footage movies that are really popular these days, like, what was it, Paranormal Encounter? What is it?
Paranormal, I have no idea.
You know the one I'm talking about.
No, that
though.
Was the ghost one. Paranormal Activity. Was
Paranormal Activity. That is correct. But to make something look real,
a girl from Resident Evil. It was
well,
like Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind or something.
Yeah,
something like that. But
there's a lot of weird.
Yeah. The general idea that you just to make something look real, you shake the camera around so you can't actually see anything.
No, that's home video. I believe that. Who could fake that?
I believe in shaky cam. Yeah, but I you guys were talking about right before the show about how you were, and I just made this connection. We're at a low point for UFO sightings and for Bigfoot sightings and stuff like that right now, as you said. And then we were talking about how everybody has cameras now. Everybody has cameras on their phones. Maybe these things coincide. Maybe now that we can record everything, they're...
I think they're afraid of the free thinkers, or at least cameras in general.
Yeah, yeah.
Being documented is like they're one huge fear. Obviously, the government will come and brainwash you. Which Men in Black 3 was a good movie, but I don't think that was a documentary.
All right. Well, we gotta move on, so we'll talk to you later. Thank you for calling in.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. No, I'm serious. It's now that we have the technology to record anything, anywhere, at any time in beautiful, high-definition video, suddenly we're not seeing Bigfoot or space aliens anymore.
Yeah, we have to make excuses for them. I was talking to Case before the show about this, and we say it's kind of funny when talking about interdimensional Bigfoot as an example is that we don't base our theories off of the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
We base our theories to explain why we have no evidence. That if we can't find Bigfoot in there, then he must be doing something special to hide from us. If we can't find the UFOs or get a clean picture, they must be doing something to hide from us. And then we just manufacture out of thin air whatever that reason could be. And could be's very quickly turn into is.
Or if you take it a step further, if the government has some sort of report that disproves your favorite pet theory, the government is part of the cover-up.
The government is terrified, and that's why they released this fake document.
If people knew that UFOs were real, what? There would be mass panic is kind of the pet theory, but I think people would be actually just fine with that.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit better than that. And those documents from Britain, I think, I wonder, 6,700 pages? I bet you 5,700 of them are crop circles. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go into the break, and when we come back, we're still talking invaders from outer space.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Stop throwing money away.
Shop with NetPro Ink and Toner and save up to 60% off your printing cost. All of our compatible cartridges have a 100% full-year quality guarantee. Visit us at www.netprotx.com. That's NetProtx.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show on the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Yeah, one of the downsides of being near a military base is occasionally they have air shows. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
I think we're too close to the truth, so they're circling us.
Oh, is it the black fighter jets? All right. Well, before we were talking about sort of the differences between people who, you know, you're David Icke's and the people who have beliefs about UFO abductions and why. You know, and then us, the skeptics, the people who are looking for things. And you're, like I said before, you're the archon of the Seattle Skeptics Organization. So this is something that this is very important to you.
Yes. In a nutshell, the difference between skeptics and believers, it can be summed up pretty easily in that when approached with evidence that we don't have an answer for, a skeptic is, he can say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And that's okay. It's okay to say I don't know. But a believer has to fill in the gaps. They have to say, that's a ghost, or that's a UFO, or that's got to be Bigfoot. Because it's more satisfying to have that kind of answer.
Well, a good example of this in the history of Ask an Atheist is the episode we did with Russell Glasser. It was you, me, and Russell Glasser, and we were talking about the ghost shows. And one of the things that I will never forget is I didn't know about this, is that they would carry their digital recorders around to record ambient noise, and then they would process that ambient noise looking for signals. And the thing is the ambient noise that they were hearing was basically digital static from the low bit rates of their audio recorders. And they're hearing these waterfall-y noises, thinking that these things that they're hearing are words. And then they try to apply word, and because they fully believe that instead of static, they're hearing, you know, ghost words. So they try to put meaning on them. But, you know, when you guys were talking about the ghost shows and stuff like that at Seattle Skeptics, it's like, no, the evidence is clear. It's something else.
It's pareidolia. It's the human mind's ability to take patterns and match them and hear words where none exist.
Yeah.
I do have a bit of a follow-up to that. I was on the Angry Ghost Hunters podcast last week.
Angry Ghost Hunters?
Yes. I think that the ghost hunter community is coming to some sort of tipping point with the fact that they're not actually finding anything. I'm starting to see some interesting things going on in the ghost hunter community. And I brought up that very same story about the Clinch brothers and the whole EVPs thing. Mm-hmm. They actually know them. They actually are in touch with them. And I brought up some specific points of issues that I had with them in that specific episode. So we may be able to have some sort of science believer kind of hoedown at some point.
So is that what the angry ghost hunter is? Is that he's somebody who's angry that they haven't evidence yet?
Angry at his own community, at their own communities, because they're seeing bad and blatantly bad science. And so they actually reached out to me and said, What would a skeptic add to our team? What would we see that's different? And they said, the first thing you guys are doing wrong is your methodology is completely off. Yeah. You're not doing the scientific method. You're just looking for anomalies, and you're calling those ghosts.
Before Ask an Atheist, you told me that I should go find New Age and research groups and stuff like that in my area and offer to be the skeptic. and just go on there and says, yeah, I'm here because you guys want to do ghost hunting, and I'm a skeptic, I don't believe in this stuff like you guys do, you might want to have somebody like me on your team. Also, I'm very good with sound, I'm very good at, you know, I do radio stuff as a hobby, and I have a lot of the equipment that you guys use to find ghosts. And strangely enough, nobody took me up on it.
Nobody's interested in it. I think there's a level of unintentional self-awareness there, which honestly doesn't usually as refreshing as what Case is talking about with his ghost group, is that this happens with UFO things all the time, which is the lack of evidence. How do you respond to the lack of data that you actually have done? Given the years of research that these guys claim to have done, and you come up with a big fat goose egg, I that's the thing that gets me with these experts, is that they really aren't experts. I know that there's been a number of times when there's been deliberate hoaxes about UFOs.
Yeah.
Whether it's a fake crop circle that somebody created the night before with a bunch of their friends, or a fake UFO lights in the sky, and you get these experts, they swarm down on this crop circle, they swarm down on the pictures of lights in the sky, and they say, this is irrefutable, this is proof right here, you can't dispute this. And then 2 weeks later...
But then they don't talk about it. As I mentioned early in the show, Gulf Breeze, Florida. And the reason I mentioned Gulf Breeze, Florida is that there was a book. I think it was called The Gulf Breeze Sightings. Gulf Breeze is a suburb of Pensacola, Florida, if Pensacola has suburbs. And it was this guy there who had these pictures and these, and these stories, the aliens that look like the communion aliens and stuff like that. And just building this huge narrative about these alien sightings and about his abductions and about the medical experiments. And this is like a 200-page book that I read when I was 13. And I was like, wow, if this is all backed up, this is pretty big. And then he disappeared off the face of the earth. And I had no idea what happened. I'm like, if this evidence exists, why aren't we talking about it? Well, it turns out that he had been debunked. But the details about how he was debunked are kind of sketchy, because people are kind of clouding the waters a little bit because they don't want to take away from the real UFO research that's going on. So it gets, you know, when you do stuff like that, when you cherry pick, and when you talk about the good evidence and you don't talk about the bad evidence and you don't talk about the fabrication, you're not really researching at that point. You're entertaining.
When you're playing around.
And when you're personally invested in a position, you're more likely to do that kind of cherry picking to maintain that belief.
Yeah.
There's another point I want to make. At that Bigfoot town hall, one of the believers said, I found a nest of Bigfoots.
Yeah.
That one has been discovered. Yes, he used the word nest. This was in 1992. That's 20 years ago. Nothing has come of it. And so it just proves that they're just trying to perpetrate something without any real evidence
for it. We're always right on the verge of the big thing that blows the lid off this thing, and that moment never comes.
I mean, I talked about entertainment, but these ghost hunter guys, the folks, you know, our favorite, you know, the Paranormal State guys, the MUFON network, it just seems like they're more interested in entertainment than they are in research, and they have an outlet for that now. And we have a call. We have Michael from Virginia, and he wants to talk about the quote-unquote History Channel. How you doing today, Michael?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Doing great. So, the History Channel.
What do you got for us?
I'm just wanted to make a comment or a few comments about how there's sort of this appeal to authority or somewhat of appeal to authority that happens with some people, and I often see it with younger people that were brought up with YouTube and you know, the cable TV and outlets of that nature, where for instance, and my main point was that the History Channel, which now shows very little actual programming that has to do with actual history, and shows a lot of shows about UFO hunters and ancient aliens and things of that sort. And I'm sure you guys have seen these shows and know how ridiculous the claims are and the people on the show and how they, you know, use a lot of bad logic and logical fallacies to argue their point. But I was talking to some younger people a few months ago about some of their shows, and they're really ardent believers about ancient aliens and UFOs and alien contacts and abductions, and the point that kept being made was that, well, it's the History Channel, as though that gave it some validity, as though, you know, they don't realize that the History Channel is in the business of ratings, not so much, you know, providing accurate historical information.
The important thing to know here is that the History Channel is not in the business of science and truth. It's really about ratings and bringing in advertisers and revenue. And that's the sad truth. In fact, that's kind of the problem that all media has, really, yeah. is they have to be provocative, and they have to bring in something that you haven't seen before to bring the eyeballs in.
But the idea that because it's on the media, that it was somehow, there seems to be this idea in people's minds that there's some sort of organization out there that vets media, that tests media, makes sure these claims have merit before they allow them on the television. There is no such group like
no.
that anywhere.
No. Unless someone was advertising a product that was blatantly false, that would be the only thing that they'd really pick up on.
Right.
But for the most part, yeah, you're free to espouse any theory you want with no evidence whatsoever. If it brings, I think the best example of that I've seen recently was that Animal Planet show about the mermaid. They found a mermaid, and the evidence they had for this was they had some old drawings, they had some eyewitness reports. Next thing you know, you've got a 2-hour special loaded with 3D graphics, lots of scary music, some stories, and a lot of guesswork as to what these things are. It was just brutal.
All right, Mike, we're coming up against the hour we got to get. Thank you very much.
But I got to make one last point.
All right, real quick.
The mermaid show was actually fake. It was a mockumentary.
No kidding.
And the Discovery Channel, whoever originally, premiered that, did not let that be known until much later, until after they got a lot of feedback, basically about how, the show was so bogus. So,
all right, well, actually, we got to get. So thank you very much for your call.
It's about the revenue.
It's about the revenue. And we have a story about that. It was a documentary style series on the existence of mermaids that first aired on Animal Planet in late May, beginning with a show titled Mermaids, The Body Found. The show made the claim that mermaids exist based on evidence such as testimony from government scientists and the earliest known depiction of a mermaid, an ancient Egyptian cave drawing. Then NOAA wasn't having, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the people responsible for your weather radios. They laid the myth to rest in a June 26 post on the Ocean Facts section of their website. They reported, "Are mermaids real? No evidence of aquatic humanoids has ever been found." Thanks, NOAA, for clearing that up.
And just in case, also not real, the Loch Ness Monster,
yeah.
Sea monsters, and sadly, Aquaman.
I know that was tough for you to say. And yeah. You've come a long way, Mike. Thank you.
You have come a long way. That's the thing. It's like NOAA is kind of like the governmental Aquaman, if you think about it. They lord over the air and the sea and fish, I guess. I don't know.
And point out the things that are... There's just so many bad ideas. And that's the thing that gets me is that, yes, it's illegal for me to tell lies to sell a product.
But yeah.
If the lies are the product, it's perfectly legal.
Well, it's kind of silly that...
Well said.
That NOAA had to speak up about this. I kind of wonder what the back... Were they getting a lot of calls asking why aren't you releasing the mermaid files?
Apparently,
Is that what was going on here?
Yes.
I think that these are guys who are scientists and ideally probably skeptics, and they've been noticing the glut of media, whether it's ancient aliens and UFO abductions and werewolves and all sorts of stuff in the media, being treated like serious science, and they were like, oh my god, is it at this point now? I gotta say something.
I don't agree. I actually think it's they were probably getting a lot of static from, because these people, NOAA does a lot of really important work. They're doing atmospheric tests, they're trying to do weather models, they're trying to make more accurate weather predictions, they're making sure that ships don't capsize when they go, they're doing really important stuff. I'm thinking that their communication, their phone lines and their email boxes got all clogged up with people going, "Where are the mermaids? You're not talking about the mermaids. Where are they?" I really think that's probably what happened here. That's why they spoke up.
Let's face it. That NOAA coming out saying that there are no mermaids is not going to dispel people believing in them if they really want to. And it's part of the government cover up.
And that's part of why we need skeptic groups and why we need to talk about skepticism is just because it's on TV, just because somebody who worked for the government 10 years ago says something about it, doesn't mean it's necessarily true.
How sad is it that we've come down to mermaids and having to point out that mermaids aren't real?
They closed that 1992 Bigfoot with the question, what's the harm? What's the harm in believing in a Bigfoot, right? What's the harm in believing, in this case, a mermaid?
Yeah.
And the point could be made that the harm is that you're opening yourself up to non-critical thinking.
Yeah.
Although it seems like not a big deal at first, that does open you up to bad ideas later on down the road.
Yeah, I like to think that bad ideas don't exist in isolation, and that skepticism is just basically a screen door for your brain. That is a methodology for determining whether an idea is true or false.
Yeah.
And if you have a wide open door, not only is air going to get in, but a lot of dead leaves and birds and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, maybe believing in Bigfoot isn't harmful to you. But the methodology to let Bigfoot in is going to let in other ideas that are harmful, like anti-vaccination conspiracies and stuff that do lead to a resurgence of things like pertussis.
Or putting down money on a psychic that claims to talk to your mom, 9/11 conspiracy theories. I mean, it opens you up to a lot of other nonsense.
Yeah, we're not saying that the History Channel shouldn't do these shows. We're not saying that Sylvia Brown isn't allowed to tour the country defrauding people. She's allowed to go. She's allowed to perform. She's allowed to entertain. But that doesn't mean that she's telling the truth, right? I mean, that's kind of my point. Where am I wrong there, I guess?
I guess it's, when somebody's an entertainer, it's one thing. Like Penn and Teller, they basically perform what appears to be supernatural feats.
Sure.
But they don't pretend that they're real. Sylvia Brown, her audience is not going there for a good show. They're going there to talk to grandma.
So here we go. Mm-hmm. I think you could say that what Sylvia Brown does is very, very close to what a preacher does.
Okay.
You know, that they're talking to someone spirit, you know, supernatural, and thus that supernatural entity has a message just for them.
All right.
And in that way, they kind of are in that little sacred space with and kind of get away with that. And I think that's a larger problem that, you know, we'd have to tackle. But I think that's the gray area that she can get away with that.
Okay.
Not that I agree with it, obviously.
Now, if people wanted to hang out with the Seattle Skeptics, where would they find you guys
on? SeattleSkeptics.com. You could check out a link to get to the meetup, and you can get a calendar of all the events that we do. We've been doing Skeptics Breakfast recently, and we have our anchor events once a month at the Blue Star in Wallingford.
Okay. Oh, you're back at the Blue Star in Wallingford.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, still looking for a new home, but yeah.
So very quickly, we need to talk about Peggy's challenge, and let's thank some people very quickly. We have Sean from West Valley City, Utah; Anita from Toronto, Ontario, Canada; Dennis from Bensalem, Pennsylvania; Jeffrey from South Milwaukee, Wisconsin; Alfredo from Modesto, California; and Tim from Seattle. So Becky's challenge.
Yes, this is Peggy from Kent. Put out the challenge. You want to help out our show? Want to help keep us on the air? It costs us money. Please go to our website, AskAnAtheist.tv, click the big yellow button on the left, help us out.
So was there anything we did the streamathon? We're going to be doing doing some more fundraising coming up. We're actually considering doing an episode of Ask an Atheist in front of an audience again. So
I had a lot of fun doing that, so I would look forward to doing that again. I think that there's something about an audience and getting immediate feedback to the stuff you do that kind of charges it. Is there something kind of entertaining about it?
Yeah, yeah. So what's coming up for Seattle Skeptics?
Rebecca Watson is coming to town next month.
Okay.
We've got the month after that, we'll have a speaker tell us a little bit about why he thinks global warming is not man-made, which is very, very controversial. So I like to invite speakers who we may necessarily not agree with.
Yeah,
so
one time you put me at a Seattle Skeptics meeting, you put me across the table from one of the young earth creationists
who we're going to talk to today.
A little bit embarrassing for me.
a nice chess move on my part, but yeah, yeah.
I think it worked. All right. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me today was Mike and Case and Jeremy Whitman. As usual, our music is by Chris Coleman. Our production assistant for Rebecca Friedman, Darren Garvin, and Jerry Schiffelbein. Post show is at Doyle's in about an hour. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or leave a voicemail at 206-420-0997. See you guys next week.
KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma.